It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
He has to speak tonight in front of a crowd of people, something I think he is not looking forward to. But someone I know has no problem with public speaking, Joshua Briscoe. He is our Chiefs contributor. I have no idea if you like to publicly speak. Are you good with that or no?
Yeah, I am. And it's kind of funny hearing you say that about Gold, because I think a lot of people automatically assume if you can do radio at whatever level Gold does radio at, I'm going to say above average, you know, just to be generous.
Yeah, you know, five and a half, six.
Yeah, yeah. If you can be a 5.5 radio host, you could probably be at least a 4.5 public speaker, right? But they really are two very different things. Ultimately, you're really just talking to Drew all day, as opposed to in front of a large room of people. I'm pretty comfortable with both at this point.
I'm just talking to like Drew and an open window with cars going by on Shawnee Mission Parkway. I think maybe it's come with age. I don't know what it is. I've gotten worse at it, I think, because we'll go and do station events, right? Where like part of the job is like, hey, interact and shake hands and glad hand with people. And I am so awkward in those situations. Like I'm terrible in those situations almost. And I imagine the text line would agree with me.
Well, so that's interesting, because of I think three different little like branches of interpersonal interactions, that might also be the one that I'm worst at. I think that's a third thing, though.
Yeah,
public
that's fair.
Speaking versus small talk, kind of move around, meet people, all of that. Again, you know, for whatever skills I didn't get that would have allowed me to perhaps play sports at a professional level, I did have the right genealogy behind me to talk at a professional level at most depths. I come from a long generation of yappers.
Yeah, yeah. I've decided that I was one of seven, and it's like, I just don't feel like anyone's listening to me enough. And I'm like, well, I'll get a microphone and then I'll show the rest of you. You'll have no choice but to listen to me. You're stuck now. Anyway, let's talk about the Chiefs-Bills game coming up this Sunday. Obviously, it's a massive game for both teams. As far as what it means for the number one seed, we all understand in the long scheme, it's can you beat the Chiefs in the postseason or we don't care. But Harrison Butker news that came out of nowhere yesterday, I pointed out, while I do think it's a big injury, just like any big injury, because you've taken a serious downgrade at the position, the idea that I wouldn't trust him to make any kick or I'd rather have Justin Reed make extra points, Harrison Butker was a practice squad player they picked up in the middle of the season. I'm not saying Spencer Schrader is Harrison Butker, but I imagine he can do a serviceable job for the next month.
Yeah, and you just have to hope that whatever the Dave Toe, Brett Veach special team scouting brain trust looks like can produce something similar. Now, look, we had, Matthew Wright and Matthew Amendola, I believe, for the period of time that Butker missed when he got hurt in the Cardinals game, right? First game of the year? Is that him and McDuffie the same time?
Yeah.
Whatever that period of time was, though, that he missed and kind of had his ongoing ankle issue and everything, it was a journey. I feel okay about it. I do think it's hilarious. It's like, all right, welcome to the reigning back-to-back champions, young man. You're going to go kick in the windiest stadium in football, most likely, but in a game between two teams that have generational trauma at the kicker position. Uh-huh. So it really is like a huge spot for him, but I think it'll be okay if I had to make my bet early on.
Yeah, I just don't like, I'm not saying it's not nothing, but it's not as important as when they lost Rashee Rice or when they lost corner two, right? Jalen Watson. It's not as big of a deal as when, like, those are more impactful injuries. I think it's less impactful than when they lost Pacheco, at least on that end. So, like, those are more impactful injuries. I just think everyone lives in this fear that is, it's 21-20, it's the fourth quarter, 45 yards away with 5 seconds to go, and Schrader stepping up to the kick. And then you're like, that's because then Monday morning is, damn it, they'd be 10-0. If Harrison Butker still existed.
Yes. That I think is the reasonable fear of all of this. Like, I'd even extend it to say, if you let me have a magic wand of a magical healing spell for either Harrison Butker or Charles Aminihou is a more impactful football player, but the reason the Chiefs made Butker the highest paid kicker in football this offseason, and the reason that people rightfully think about Butker in those big moments, is because they are the biggest moments. You don't really think about his first three or four kicks of a game, by and large. No. Maybe it's at the end of the half, or maybe it's hitting a 60-yarder or whatever, but a lot of that's business as usual. And again, I don't want to undercut and say that he's like average outside of big moments. He's not. He's the best kicker in football. But when you think about sealing a Super Bowl victory or punching your ticket to the next round of the playoffs, that ball's usually coming off Harrison Butker's foot. So the one thing that he's really allowed them to do over the years is that idea of like, all right, Mahomes, you don't need a touchdown. You need to get to like the 35. And at that point, we'll just hand it over to Butker and we feel pretty good about winning the football game from that moment. That line moves way up and you can't fully trust that it's going to be as automatic as it has been for Butker. So I would love for it not to be 21-20 with the ball in Patrick Mahomes' hands with like 45 seconds left. I'd rather them handle this before that moment comes around, because that very well could matter. The big thing here, of course, is that it seems like Butker should be okay for the playoffs, and then hopefully this isn't stress we have to take into January.
Well, I think the way in which it makes it interesting to me is, I think Andy Reid, especially this year, because they know how good the defense is and they've got 2 years in a row of doing it. Yep. I think Andy Reid is perfectly fine with taking what you just said, a 50-yard field goal. He's like, it's fine. Like, I don't need to be overly aggressive. And he's never been that aggressive of a coach. How much more aggressive is he with a kicker he doesn't know?
Pretty, like subjectively here, I'm going to say 25% more aggressive. Does that, like
he, that's actually almost the perfect number for him, weirdly enough. So I hope you're right. I wish he was 25% more aggressive, like, now.
Yes, 100%. So do I. The funny thing is, there's like another 25% of aggression that I think he's moving. I wish Andy Reid was 50% more aggressive, I think, by and large. Because you have those gray areas where it's either punt or try to keep the football, or you have those gray areas where it's long field goal or try to keep the football. And I think Andy Reid will, if it's fourth and four, but they're at their own 40-yard line on Sunday, they should obviously be going for that, right?
I mean,
they should be anyway.
But he might punt.
I can't let that happen. That's the one for me where when it's Butker, and I'm kind of picked that yard marker sort of arbitrarily, but what would that be, like a 56-yarder or something for Butker to try? Butker's probably trying a 55-yarder or
yes.
So. They're not sending the Schrader out there for a 55-yarder. So just leave Patrick Mahomes on the field so Matt Araiza doesn't go out there and put it through the end zone, which is something that he's been doing at a very high rate recently. Like, don't do this for 20 yards of field position. I think Reid will get those decisions correct. If it's fourth and three at the 15, I think they're going to kick the field goal.
If you had to, I've been asked this question when appearing on like other stations or those things, because I think it is kind of a tough thing to quantify. So I'm curious how you answer it. How would you explain to others how it is the Chiefs are doing what they're doing at 9-0, maybe they get to 10-0 this weekend, while missing all the players? What do you think the Chiefs are legitimately great at? Because they are missing a huge chunk of their roster for a large majority of this season. What do you think the Chiefs are great at that allows them to get to the record they're at?
This is the Broncos game is the perfect encapsulation of what I think the answer to that question is. Point one is that they're the best in football at having Patrick Mahomes. Like, that is,
you know what? That's a great thing to be great at.
It really is. It sounds sarcastic, but I honestly completely seriously mean it. When you have the quarterback that changes games, that changes your goal, like moves your goalposts almost literally up towards you. When you have that guy and Travis Kelce, even a little bit from DeAndre Hopkins in his first few games here, you have an offensive line that can kind of help you set your floor in the running game at least. Obviously, left tackle notwithstanding at the moment. Or at least not withstanding for last week. But they do already have a relatively high floor because of their great players, and they have an incredibly high ceiling because of Mahomes. The other thing, though, is that the people have been talking about this for ages, and I think it's just hard to wrap your head around it and to pinpoint exactly where this comes from. You talk about the Chiefs finding a way to win, and that they're great at finding a way to win. And that's, like, true. We can see that, but it's very hard to figure out why that is. I think part of it is all the way to that blocked field goal at the end of the Broncos game, man. When you have scouting and coaching throughout the week that leads you up to knowing what you're working on, and then you have players like Leo Chanel, who's a physical freak, who's locked in for that moment, he also believes, like Kareem Hunt said this on his mic'd up that the Chiefs put out yesterday or 2 days ago, where Kareem Hunt was like, "Nah, we're going to block this. This will be fine." And then later was telling somebody right. Well, and he said, "Oh, it's 2 weeks in a row. I've never seen anything like this." Well, you have a home walk-off in overtime. You have a blocked field goal the next week at Arrowhead. Mecole Hardman scored a game-winning walk-off touchdown in the Super Bowl. Kadarius Toney and Sky Moore have Super Bowl moments. There should be no player active on game day who is completely confident that they will not make the play to win the football game. That there is a legitimate chance that Peyton Hendershot will touch down to beat the Buffalo Bills. There's a legitimate chance that Carson Wentz will be on the field to beat the Buffalo. Every level of that, there is something legitimate to it. So it really is to me, coaching and preparation and talent, and then believing that that combination is going to put you in a position to win. And of course, they've earned that. It's not just you gotta believe. They've earned it. They've won two straight championships, and they haven't played their best football for long stretches of any of those seasons. I think it's a big, big answer with a lot of factors, but I think a lot of factors are what it takes to build a dynasty.
So anytime we like talk about not just you and I, just anytime we talk about like teams and matchups and okay, there's no Dalton Kincaid. That seems like it really favors Kansas City, a team that, you know, is terrible against tight ends, generally speaking, yeah. Or the things that would like go into that. I don't feel like we ever compare, like we don't go into a game like we should every game and be like, who are the two head coaches of these teams real quick?
Yeah.
And you're like, you know, in a couple of weeks, it'd be like, okay, so one's Andy Reid and the other one's Antonio Pierce. Yep. Well, I'll just be honest with you. I can tell you which way I'm leaning on that one. So where are you on Sean McDermott? Because, like, in their division, Harbaugh's obviously made the division coaching significantly better. Pierce stinks. Peyton is a respected NFL head coach. Where do you think Sean McDermott lands in the pantheon of NFL head coaches?
I have a really hard time getting him anywhere out of the middle of the pack.
Yeah, like 10. That's where I feel like. I don't know.
Yeah, I think if you're going to get to a point where you have some, you know, plenty of dysfunctional teams and then teams with coaches who just haven't won anything yet, that maybe they will and maybe they never will, but it's a little early to call your shot there. I look at Buffalo. The thing with them that's interesting this year, so their two losses are to the Ravens and Texans, two very good teams. The Ravens have obviously been hotter since then than Houston. But I expected this Bills team to take a step back. Now, obviously, the rest of the AFC East was in a race to the back, so that wasn't really an ongoing concern for the division.
No.
But I really thought that they had kind of put together their best two chances. The Chiefs obviously trounced them, or at least got past them both times. And then I thought this was going to be a little bit of a reset year for Buffalo, and Josh Allen's been playing tremendous football that I think has largely erased a lot of those things that I was expecting. That makes it even harder to evaluate McDermott, though, because I don't think terribly highly of him from a schematic standpoint or from a, you know, leadership culture standpoint. But they've gotten a lot more out of this defense, I think, than a lot of people were expecting based off the talent they had coming into the year. So that's a point in McDermott's favor. And he has a quarterback who is playing like Josh Allen should be at this point. I would also argue in years past, McDermott had kind of gotten in Allen's way a little bit, where some of the big reckless things that every conservative head coach wants to get out of a quarterback, I understand why. But when you have Josh Allen, you just need to kind of
let him
steer
live
into the skid a little bit sometimes and let the man live. He's doing that now, though. I mean, you're going to get some Superman plays while Josh Allen has also, I know this is, now I'm talking about Josh Allen because I can only not talk about Josh Allen for so long, but he is mentally playing the sport of football at a very high level right now. He is quarterbacking, like capital Q quarterbacking, along with everything else that he does physically. And so I think that seeing that relationship between Allen and McDermott seem a little less fraught, seeing the Bills defense take a little bit more of a step than we were thinking, I do think he's certainly moved in the right direction so far this season, but I also would not put him in that top 10 of when I think a coach is like an active positive for a team.
It's like so hard with like Josh Allen. At times I feel a little bad for him because his biggest problem in his career is that he exists in a world in which Patrick Mahomes also exists.
Yep.
And some bizarro multiverse in which Patrick Mahomes chooses to play professional baseball instead and is like a 3-time World Series champion. Yep. Josh Allen's career might look a lot different. I straight up asked Mike Shope, who's a host over at WGR in Buffalo, said, what would Josh Allen's career look like if Patrick Mahomes was just in the NFC? Mm. Like, if we just flipped the conference, yep. Do you think he'd have an MVP or two MVPs? Do you think he'd have a Super Bowl appearance or Super Bowl wins? And I'm like, yeah, I think he'd probably have a Super Bowl win and an MVP. And someone's like, well, he just lost to Mahomes in the Super Bowl. I'm like, nah, I'll just, in my hypothetical, he goes the 1 year Mahomes doesn't in the NFC, I guess, right?
Right, yeah.
When he beats the Eagles every year or the 49ers in the NFC title game every year.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. It's true to some extent for Burrow, but I think it's way more true, and to some extent for Lamar, but I think it's mostly the truest for Josh Allen, because I also think Josh Allen in a lot of ways would be the face of football. He would be every 13-year-old's favorite football player, right? Like, just everything that he does is so much fun. I genuinely love watching Josh Allen, and I think he's clearly the second best quarterback in football right now, and he's had a better season in a lot of ways than Mahomes has, but, you know, I'm ranking quarterbacks. It's Mahomes and then a gap and then Allen and then another gap, for me at least, before you get to kind of the next tier.
When you look at what to expect from this game upcoming this weekend, how would you have handled this week at left tackle? Obviously, Wanya has to start and he's been practicing all week. Yeah. But honestly, I don't think Kingsley can be put in a position that he is one slight knee twist away from having to go back to Kingsley. I am a little surprised they did not go look out on the veteran market for someone on a practice squad or something just to, like, cover their ass a little.
Yeah, I can't fight you on that too much. The other thing that's a problem there is that Kingsley's your swing tackle right now, too. Like, Ethan Driscoll's on the 53-man roster, but he's been a healthy scratch every week because he's just redshirting, and he's a giant, and the Chiefs have a long-term view for him. But that means that your active tackles every week are just Wanya Morris, Kingsley Suamataia, and Juwan Taylor. I even wondered at some point, and I guess we could see later today, to your point, Lucas Niang is on the practice squad. I do not think they love Lucas Niang. They cut him to keep Ethan Driscoll active, so that might be a little bit more of a desperation move. We're not going to see Chu Godrick yet. He's the international player, so he has an exception on the practice squad there. But maybe Lucas Niang could be a call-up to try to add a little bit of depth there. That's actually something I hadn't considered until now that would make a lot of sense, noting that Wanya also is banged up. If Wanya gets hurt and Kingsley gets hurt, now you're moving Tooney out to left tackle, and then you're getting Caliendo at left guard, I guess. All that to say, it's really, really hard for me right now to see a world in which Kingsley plays legitimate snaps this year and isn't an absolute panic attack experience for everybody watching, the Chiefs included, right? Like, it was really, really evident. So I think Donovan Smith makes sense at some point. He would not have been able to play today, I don't think, anyway.
No.
If they would have called him right after the Broncos game, I don't think he'd be playing. But I wonder about the Donovan Smith potential connection. I don't think Bakhtiari makes any sense, but I think Donovan Smith could be a guy that they do check in on, especially if Wanya's banged up. And then I'd go ahead personally, since we got here, I'd elevate Lucas Niang to have another tackle out there in case Wanya gets hurt again and you realize Kingsley cannot finish that game.
Like, that's the problem. It's like he just couldn't, like, I mean, Mahomes couldn't stand back there. Like, they said 8 pressures in 46 snaps. I'm like, that doesn't sound right. But then it was also like, well, half of those are rushing snaps. And now you're like, well, now you're talking about 1 out of every 3. And it wasn't like when he lost, it wasn't just a loss. It was Patrick Mahomes had to fear for his own safety. In that, which is the whole other part of this I get into. The other guy who's coming back this week is Juju Smith-Schuster.
Yeah.
I view this as he raises the floor. Is he better than McColl or Justin Watson or Justin Ross? The answer to that is inevitably yes. But I'm having a hard time coming up with this equates to more regular points in the offense. Do you feel differently?
Maybe a little bit. The one thing in a really small sample size is we have seen some Justin Ross snaps these last few weeks. If they want to go with a little bit of a bulkier personnel, that's a Juju role that makes a lot of sense. And I would be interested, especially in the red zone, because none of these guys are exactly downfield burners at this point in their career. But if you have DeAndre Hopkins, Juju Smith-Schuster, and Travis Kelce all on the field at the same time, all being able to work against zone coverage, all being deadly against the short and intermediate ranges, That's a legitimate trio that I would be kind of excited to see out there. You're going to still see Justin Watson. They trust him to do pretty much everything. And he's a very different player, Juju, than Watson or Worthy or Hardman or any of those guys. So it is a little unfortunate that the slight redundancy might be Juju and Hopkins. But I think they've got to have a plan in place for figuring out how to keep those guys on the field together. Because I'd rather have Worthy on the outside in Watson's role if he's running a clear out or some other sort of deep post, something deep downfield. Let Worthy do that while your veteran zone beaters and intermediate threats should be able to find plenty of space in this defense.
I would think so, but like again, I think the redundancy problem is very real in the sense that unless those Xavier Worthy deep balls are going to start getting completed, how does this make sense? And I guess like where is the issue there in your mind? I still feel like that's close. I think we're going to talk about it here in a few minutes, but like I still think it's close, but yet I can't figure out why Mahomes hasn't consistently been able to find Worthy on those plays. It was Worthy's fault a couple of weeks ago, but we all know the throw last week was Mahomes throwing that ball out of bounds.
Yeah, it. I also think it's close, but I am also worried about it, if that makes sense. Like, I am fully in both of those spaces.
Yeah.
Because I, to your point, Worthy walked one out of bounds 2 weeks ago, Mahomes threw one out of bounds last week. If those are connections, The NFL world, I think we'd still be responsible about it, but the national NFL world would be breathless about how Xavier Worthy is the new weapon that's going to unlock the Chiefs offense. Instead, those are both incomplete by about 3 feet total, and now it's, you know, is he going to be a first-round bust? So I think continuing to push that is important because I do think it's important to be there by January with him. The thing that concerns me is, in part, what you mentioned there with Mahomes. I don't think he really wants to throw that ball as much as he used to. We saw him struggle with MVS. I mean, that was mostly MVS struggling, but like we saw that connection struggle. And I think maybe Mahomes has just sort of learned to love the intermediate stuff and the short range things because those deep shots are a little riskier, especially when you can't fully trust that receiver. He always knew where Tyreek Hill was going to be. He trusted DeAndre Hopkins on a deep bomb and about triple coverage. So I think there's a chance that relationship does click into place here and somewhere in the back half of the season and that Xavier Worthy is a legitimate weapon. I would also, in the meantime, I would have him out there for as many live reps as he can get, even if that comes at the expense of having a Justin Watson out there doing some similar cardio routes. The other thing that they trust Watson to do that Juju can do is some of the interference, the pick plays, the rub routes and all of that. So I think you can upgrade the, like, veteran-savvy wide receiver position, but obviously, again, Watson is a better downfield threat, or at least a more legitimate downfield threat than Juju would be.
Could it be chalked up to offensive line, like the deep stuff?
It's that, too.
Like,
yeah,
I mean, some
sure.
of it's just like, right, he doesn't feel like he can stand back there that long, and when he can, he rushes it because he's like, shouldn't I have been hit by now?
Yep, no, that's a good point. I think that the rush is the rush throw in a relatively clean pocket, I think, is what happened to the one that he missed to Worthy, right? Where he threw out of bounds, if memory serves. That's a very good call. That very frequently there has been real pressure that would make it hard to target downfield. And when there hasn't been real pressure, Mahomes, I think, has still felt some false pressure because he's kind of earned that reputation this year from his offensive line. It's hard to trust that you're not going to get your head knocked off from your blind side after you have, you know, seen Nick Bonito absolutely rip that corner like three snaps in a row.
Yeah, that was the one that was just like, I can't keep watching this. This is terrifying me. Well, I'll ask you, you have to give me a score prediction, but how do you think this game is actually played on Sunday?
I have been waffling. I will give you a score prediction just because I needed to yesterday, and I'm just going to stamp it in because if it changes teams, it wouldn't surprise me.
I sometimes forget that it liked the score I gave before, and I'm like, this one.
I write it down just so I don't have to remember multiple picks. This is the life that I lead now.
Smart.
I am very narrowly and very unconfidently, and I guess I did give this score before Harrison Butker went down, but I went 23-20 Chiefs. I think this game is every bit as close as it seems. I do not know if either side of the ball has a breakout performance for either team. It could totally change all of this. I think lower scoring is my inclination. I think Josh Allen still has a really nice game, but I do believe in what the Chiefs defense is selling. Getting a little bit more juice out of Joshua Uche would be great in the pass rush, but trying to figure out, like, do we corral Josh Allen? Do we crush the pocket? We can't flush him out. That's not going to work. I think he'll get a few big plays and impressive Josh Allen moments over on this defense, but I don't think it'll be quite enough. I'm relying on the Chiefs offense to do its job here, though. And if it ends up being 24-17 Buffalo, it wouldn't surprise me. If it's 27-17 Buffalo, I don't think it surprised me. Ultimately, though, I think one way or another, we're going to be talking about the Chiefs offense on Monday, for better or for worse, when hopefully we should be talking about the Chiefs defense that I'm going to continue to stand behind. But this could absolutely go either way for me. I have no confidence whatsoever.
Dream scenario, they win, and then Charles Omenihu and Isaiah Pacheco are coming back in addition to it.
Yes.
Although I did, I don't know, for no reason at all, I just decided to get myself convinced that they're going to win this game, and then I'm going to have to go back and revisit 2011 when the 13-0 Packers somehow lost to a miserable Chiefs team.
Oh, wow. I forgot about them. We said 13-0?
13-0 Green Bay Packers team lost to a Chiefs team who had just fired Todd Haley the week before.
Was that Nile Davis housing it in the open, opening kickoff, and then, yeah, they got Romeo the job. I remember that game pretty well. Hold on. The Chiefs would be 10, 11, 12. So it'd be the Chargers then would be week 13.
Yeah.
Sunday night football. Oh, no.
But 10-0, that stands out because it's like undefeated against a bad team. Like, no one would ever predict they'd lose to the Panthers.
That would be the funniest time for it to happen, objectively.
Yeah, absolutely. For radio purposes, it might be a dream. Josh, I really appreciate it. We'll talk to you again here soon.
Sounds good, Cody. Talk to you later.
We come back here on Cody and Gold. I want to talk about a podcast I watched over this weekend that completely changed my opinion on one player. I'll tell you who it is next.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome in to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Every day at 11:30 with Cody and Gold on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5 The Fan.
Coming up at 1 o'clock, Harold Kuntz will join us for the Fan Club. Do old fashions, Drew. Old fashions, that's the plan. Plus, we'll talk to him
good
about this. Mike Tyson, Jake Paul fight, see if anyone's interested in that. I mean, I just, like, Jake Paul seems like maybe the worst person on the planet, so.
Yeah, I think everybody's rooting for Mike Tyson.
Yes, obviously.
But we don't know.
But I don't know if the fight's rigged.
Yeah, we also want him to make it. You know, I don't want him to get knocked out for whatever reason and have a problem.
He's 60, dude.
Yeah, I know.
60. I don't know that I want, you know, I don't know if I want him to die. We can talk more about that in a little bit. This is the Chiefs Red Half Hour. I'll talk about, you know, kind of what makes this game a challenge because of the Harrison Butker news here in just a minute. But I watched a podcast and I felt like it was worth discussing on this show. The Pivot podcast with Ryan Clark and Channing Crowder. Their most recent guest who sat down with them for a full hour was Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And I know that that's not a player that we think as much about here in Kansas City anymore. He's been a healthy and active essentially since he came back from the non-football injury list. Kareem Hunt has kind of stolen the show, right, as he's come back and been effective for Kansas City. Pacheco will be back here soon. Clyde may never play another game for the Chiefs. I don't know. I think there's a chance he won't ever play another game for Kansas City. But in watching this podcast, I had a completely newfound appreciation for the struggles he went through and why I'm going to view his time in Kansas City differently as a result of it. I know he was a first-round pick, and by statistical measure, he did not lead up or live up to that billing. He is a two-time Super Bowl champ. Those things are still true. He contributed in winning seasons to winning Super Bowls. And until you watched, or until I watched this podcast, I understood what had happened in college. I had understood as a result of that, he was going through PTSD symptoms. I knew that that meant he had missed some time as a result of that. But I don't think I had understood the full breadth of it until I got him sit down for a full hour talking about it. Whether it be the puking fits that were keeping him up in the middle of the night, it would come on out of nowhere. He would have to miss practice and time and all these things. And up until the last 4 months, where he says this is now the best he's ever felt mentally and physically in his career, this was an ongoing battle that he was never able to shake. And him recounting the events, how he felt in the events leading up to it, reliving part of the shooting that took place at the parade, everything kind of in between. I came out there being like, you know what? Considering everything he was dealing with, I don't think I could have expected any more out of Clyde Edwards-Helaire's career in Kansas City.
Yeah, I agree.
I will never view him the same way as it's like, oh, he's a first-round disappointment. Like, no. He was having to do this while dealing with everything else in his life that led up to it. When he interviewed with teams, he had said all 32 teams made it very clear that they were aware of the event, were asking about the event. The only person who seemingly did know about it was Andy Reid, which is hilarious and very on brand for Andy Reid, who had to be told the story a little bit inside of the draft meeting before they took him.
Oh, boy.
In which Clyde Edwards-Helaire then described maybe getting the biggest bear hug of his life from Andy Reid upon hearing it. But the idea that Andy Reid was just like sitting around, paying attention, watching tape, focused on Clyde, all those things, is like, yeah, this feels right. It's just, I'll never view his time in Kansas City as a disappointment ever again.
Yeah.
And I know everyone's up to their own opinion, Drew, and you watched part of it as well.
Mm-hmm.
I was moved by how he talked about his mental health, the things he went through, the pure terror it rained on his body during that time physically. I can't imagine made it easy to be a football player on that end. I think I would highly recommend it. If anyone gets a chance, go check out the Pivot Podcast with Ryan Clark. It is a worthy interview. It's going to take you an hour, but it's worth the hour to watch it because it changed my opinion on it.
I enjoy their podcasts and their conversations, even going back to the ones that they have with Chad Ochocinco and everybody else, is because they talk about athletes, but you learn about them from a different angle and some of the stories that they have. And yeah, for Clyde to be able to share that, I think even too, for him to be willing enough to share it.
He's got
to
be in a good place.
Yeah, absolutely has to be in that spot. So I think for anybody that's going through any sort of situation like that, Cody, I think you learn that your expectations should have never been any more than what they, like, everything that he gave you is what he could have given you in that time, in that moment, where you can appreciate it a lot more what Clyde was able to give over the last stint that he's been a Kansas City Chief, given what he talked about on that podcast.
And look, the truth is, we'll never know what kind of player he could have been on the field had he not been dealing with those issues. But I mean, I don't care. I don't care about it. I don't care about his production on the field related to the man that he is. And they still got two Super Bowl wins with him as the running back for this team. From the 785, someone said, hey, sorry to be out of speed. I knew he had PTSD. Can you clarify? So if you haven't heard the story from Clyde Edwards-Helaire at this point, he was in college. They had been given some free PlayStations as part of a college bowl game promotion thing because they played in the PlayStation Bowl. He went with a teammate who, on a reputable site, went to sell a PlayStation or PlayStation games to a stranger, right? Just like lots of us have done, in order to sell these things to it. In that moment, the person who was originally trying to, in quotes, buy the PlayStation, put a gun to his friend's head. And Clyde Edwards-Helaire is a licensed carrier of a weapon. He's got military in his family. He's been trained with a sidearm, and he used it in self-defense to kill the person who was threatening his friend with a gun. As a result of that, he has suffered from the post-traumatic stress that came from that moment and every moment after that as a part of that. And so he's had, he's had, like, part of it is, like, he has a reflex in which he just starts vomiting uncontrollably and can't stop it as a result of those things. And so, like, those things lead to, I mean, it's just, like, it's a terrifying story of, like, what could happen to people if put in those things. And so, and the text on being hard, like, well, like, if you knew that those were the problems with mental health, why did they pick on the first? I don't think he was having the problems with the mental health then. Those things show up later. He didn't know PTSD can show up at any particular time. I'd shared this before, and I'll share it again. So right after the parade, I had shared something personally because I thought it would be beneficial to people that I was having trouble with panic attacks, not because of what happened at the parade, but a different event that led me to. So you'd be like, well, Cody, you know, like, why do they have you on the air? Or why do they put you in these public settings if that's something you suffer from, right? Similar to, like, your comment on Clyde.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never had one until I had had one. Does that make sense? Like, I had gone 38 years in my life with, I would say, a relatively low amount of anxiety or a relatively low amount of those things. The normal amount is how it felt for me in any particular. And then I started having full-blown panic attacks. So, like, sometimes you just don't know what or how those things are going to lead to those things. And so, like, at the time they drafted him, they didn't know that this would even bother him his NFL career. They were judging him. And you know how this, and I've told you this about Andy. You want to know the truth? Andy cares about what you do on a football field. That's how Andy operates. This is how he separates life from regular life from football life. It's what makes him a great football coach. Is that Andy Reid is, I think it was maybe a couple weeks ago, Drew. I said he'd have the severance surgery if you gave him. If Andy could just go in the football field, know nothing about it, and just, like, deal with football, in a lot of ways, that would be easier for Andy to conceptualize, I think. So, like, they probably, you know, they were looking at the football player. And, like, they also obviously thought they could offer him some of the service to do this. Some of the text lines said, I wouldn't be surprised to find out if they brought him back as, like, not a courtesy, but brought him back to make sure he would get the league minimum number of years so that he could continue to get the mental health services through the NFL. If that's the case, great. Again, if he never plays another down, if he never plays another down for the Kansas City Chiefs, I will view his time differently in Kansas City. Like, if he gets cut in the offseason, or he's actually a free agent, if he never signs back with Kansas City, and it's like, well, let's look back. Remember that first-round pick? What do you think about the Clyde Edwards-Helaire first-round selection? I will view his time differently as a result of having listened to this hour-long podcast, hearing the entire story, getting it in detail.
Yeah. I think it's, and to that point, you know, I would say it's not a, he's not a, I don't know if anybody would call him a bust, at least even right now. I don't know if people have said that about,
I'm sure there are people about, that view Clyde's career here that
about
way.
Clyde, but looking at, again, given the situation, like, you feel bad for, like, you wonder what kind of could have been. You feel bad for all the stuff that Clyde had been able to go to through, but you also look at what he did while also going through, and you're like, man, I don't think, like, there's a lot of people who, you know, if you really think about it, I don't think I could have been able to do what Clyde ever did. Like, if I was in Clyde's position, I don't know if I'd be able to go through playing as much and all of this stuff as what he did. I think that's, you know, you put yourself in the other person's shoes in a way, and then you gain respect for them based on the situation that they've been in. And again, I think it's nice for, is it good for Clyde to be able to share that? Because, like you said, it means that he's in a good place, and you get to learn about the individuals a little bit more. It humanizes them once again for anybody who thinks that they're just robots and get mad at
that's always
at
hard
because
like
that.
it is and I'll even admit, like, from this job perspective, it is really difficult to be like,
yes,
they're people with human emotions.
100%.
Like,
100%.
Look, I think we get a little bit of that, right? Like,
yeah,
we get, like, a small taste of that, like, in radio, be like, I can't come in and have a bad day or be having a bad emotional day. Like, there'd be no reason for you to know that or be, like, it's not like the listener. It's not like, it's hard to realize that because when people are just acting normal, like, they're playing the football game, you don't realize they're also going through home life stuff or relationship stuff or panic, you know, like, you just don't, or PTSD. It's hard to know that. So sometimes it is hard to separate the they are a person from they are an athlete. And I've tried more as I've gotten older to be more critical of the performance than the person, you know,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
they, like, I try to make it less personal in that regard. Like, if you're not performing, like we talked about, like Kingsley, right? If you're not performing, I'm just trying to make it about like the performance isn't good enough. I don't, nothing, none of this is against you as a person.
Yeah.
Right. And so like it is, it's hard. It's very hard to separate those things from the other. It's very challenging to separate 100%. Those things from the other.
100%.
We can talk more about this later in the show. Again, it's the Pivot Podcast if you want to hear more about it. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we're going to get to something I'm still convinced, even though I might go down swinging, I'm still convinced is something we're going to experience out of the Chiefs offense in about 15 minutes. But I keep getting asked, and we should keep talking about it, the Harrison Butker news yesterday, that he's had surgery as of this morning. He's going to be out 4 weeks. The earliest game he can come back is against the Cleveland Browns. So the question is, the simple question is, does this cost him the game this weekend, right? Is there a moment that Schrader misses an extra point, misses a long kick, misses a kick before half, costs them enough points, any of these things that could be existing kind of in the in-between? Is it enough to cost them a football game? And the answer is probably. I mean, yeah, what do you want me to say? I can't tell you that it won't cost him a football game. He just had surgery on his plant leg. Who's to say it'll only be a month, right? Ideally, it's a month. I'm sure he'll get to the gym and go through the rehab and do the stuff that's required to get back on the field. But I'm not here to tell you that there's not a noticeable decline between a practice squad kicker and what is currently the best, most efficient kicker in the NFL. There's obviously a drop-off. But I think it's foolish to say that Schrader's just going to, like, stink. Like, he's not going to stink.
I don't think so.
Seen how good NFL kickers are this year? It's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, they all make, like, 85% of their kicks and 95% of their extra points. They all make them from 50-plus yards.
Well, and I think
Schrader made a 45-yarder, like, 2 weeks ago for the Jets.
I guess in a very similar way to what Nate said about Wanye is, do we just need you to be serviceable? Like, we need you to be serviceable enough to protect Patrick Mahomes. We just need, as a Schrader, or as a Chiefs fan, you've got to be thinking, we just need Schrader to be serviceable. You know what? If you miss a kick here and there, it's fine. But don't go 1-for-4 or, you know, 0-for-3. You know, be able to give us a couple of kicks when you need to make the extra points. And if you miss one and it loses us a game, it's honestly, that doesn't mean the Chiefs aren't Super Bowl favorites. That doesn't mean they're not going to be able to get the one seed. It doesn't mean that they're not going to be able to host a playoff game. None of that, you know, him missing one kick or a couple of kicks over the course of the next 3-4 weeks, it's not going to be the end of the world. But you just want him to be serviceable enough.
Yeah, that's all I'm asking for. I just need him to make, like, I don't know.
You don't need him to be Harrison Butker.
I just need him to make, like, 8 out of the next 10 kicks if he has to
just
kick.
Let's just say he has to
kick 10 kicks over the next 4 games. I just need 8 of them. And I need all of them inside of 40. Like, I'm sorry to be picky, but like inside of 40, I need those.
For an NFL kicker, I think that's a fair expectation.
That's all. And then I need you to make 9 out of 10 extra points. That's it. That's all I'm. And if that's it, they'll survive. Someone says, just don't be as bad as the Eagles kicker last night. Low bar, but yes.
That was rough.
Don't be as bad as Elliott last night. And look, did it cost him the game? Or did Saquon Barkley just run for like 50-yard rushing touchdowns twice in the last like 5 minutes? Because I think Matt Verderam was right. He joined us, if you missed it, at 10:30. You can go to 96.5thefan.com and see for yourself what he said about it. But like, he's right in the sense that look at the schedule a little bit. Can Schrader cost you the game this Sunday against the Bills? Yes. Yes, he can. Absolutely no doubt about it. If they lose to the Panthers, I don't even care if it's on a last-second kick. You didn't lose because of that guy. What the hell are you on a last-second kick against the Panthers?
Yep.
Why are you on a last-second kick against the Raiders? Like, those are not teams he can lose a game against. So, like, Schrader can only, in my opinion, cost you 2 games. He could cost you the Bills game or he could cost you the Chargers game. And even the Chargers won 50-50 shot. And if I felt like that was the single biggest reason why or how you lost it, if that is actually to get him. And after that, technically, Harrison Butker should be back and available. And so if it's just a 4-week time period, I'm not in a panic yet. I don't know about other Chiefs fans. I'll take your opinion, 913-586-7965. But yeah, I'm not going to freak out about it, at least not at this point.
I don't think you should, unless for whatever reason I think you should be more nervous if Harrison Butker has like a setback in his recovery or whatever. That's when you should maybe be a little bit nervous. But up until that, like if they drop two out of the next four games, Cody, and they have two losses, they're still in a great position because they've got the tiebreaker. I mean, if they lose to the Bills, then they wouldn't have a tiebreaker. But say they beat the
one game lead at least, and then easier schedule than the Bills the rest of the way based on strength of schedule.
Yeah, so even if they drop two games, I don't know if it's enough to really be nervous about the one seed still, just based on Harrison Butker's availability to come back as what it's been reported. It seems like just in that 3 to 4 week window.
I don't know if I was trying to decide earlier on the text line. I brought this up with Vertaram and some others. I'm not trying to be a Bills hater, but I also don't think it's wrong. Like I'm a believer of you beat who you beat, right? You play who you play, you beat who you beat. But the Chiefs have five wins against teams with an at 500 or better record. The Bills have won week one of the NFL season. That is their only, I'm dead serious, singular win in 10 weeks. They've played 10 games. They've beaten one team by that margin. I mean, is that not like one winning
it stands,
team? It's not nothing.
It stands out in the same way that you, God, there's one other team. It's not, it's another team that's up there that hasn't beaten anybody either. I leave the Chargers. I know that the Chargers don't have as good of a record.
Also, the Commanders last night. Yeah. The Commanders, after losing the Eagles last night, are now 0-4 against teams with a winning record.
Yeah.
That's not nothing.
It's very weird when you look around the league. It's not like they're the only team that's like this. You know, the Chargers haven't, they got the best defense. They haven't played any good offense. They haven't played, their competition hasn't been good enough to really prove that they're worth being a number one defense. Maybe this weekend against the Bengals that have a high-flying offense. But to that point, Cody, there's more teams that, not that they're, I guess, fake, but you look at them and their record against
good teams. I just feel like I know less about them.
Yeah, and you wonder, how good is this Bills team really? Like, they're 8-2, but are they really this good?
So,
or are they really worth being 8-2? Or are they just a part of, have they taken advantage of playing bad teams and they just won those games, essentially?
So I had said, I don't think the Bills defense is as good as it has been in previous years. They're ninth currently in points per game. They have typically ranked in the top five. But I actually think they're more like 15th. And I think where they've gotten away from hiding that is, here are the here are their wins. Here are the teams they have beaten. And you tell me when you get to an offense you think is actually pretty good.
Okay.
Miami? Well, they weren't good then, right?
No.
Jacksonville?
Nope.
The Jets?
No.
Tennessee?
Absolutely not.
Seattle?
No.
Miami again?
No.
And Indianapolis?
They haven't played a good
Arizona,
offense.
The first week of the season is a good offense.
Yep.
Like, they've played two good offenses, Baltimore and Houston. They played Houston, and I'll say this, they played Houston when Houston was playing well. They allowed 23 points to Houston, a respectable number against a good offense, 35 to Baltimore. They allowed 28 to Arizona. Those are the three best offenses they've played. They're allowing 27 points a game against those offenses, and they're allowing like 12 points a game against all the teams I just listed.
What are the Chiefs averaging in terms of points compared to the Cardinals?
Points per game?
Because I wonder, like, if just based on what you said.
The Cardinals are above them. I could be wrong, but
I'm just saying, based on what you said, if they're averaging, if they give up 23, 28, and 35, the Chiefs should be right around, should expect to score 24, 27 points.
Arizona scores 23.8 points per game. Kansas City is three spots above them at 24.3.
The Chiefs should score 27 points in this game. I don't think that's it's not necessarily an expectation. I would just say you should be surprised if they score less than 21 or 20.
Yeah, or 24. Yeah. I think the range is like 21 to 27. The only reason I chalk up the lower point scoring is the thing I said to open the show, which this is a divisional game. And once you start getting into that, then it's harder to like diagnose which way this thing will go. We can talk more about that, and also something I'm convinced is coming for the Chiefs offense. That's next here on 96.5 The Fan.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm
Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together, we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.